now broadcasting the Webcomic Beacon.
Hello and welcome to episode 162 of the Webcomic Beacon here at webcomicbeacon.com. I'm your, well, first host, Fess of TooManyThingsToList.com, and this week, we are missing Tanya once again. This time her microphone is broken, so she cannot be with us, sadly. So, but it sounds like her connection might be fixed. Oh, the irony. But, so, Tanya, we miss you. Hope you're here next time.
Miss you, Tanya.
So, let's see. We do have Mark Savory back on the show of AutumnLake.com. Welcome.
Well, hello there.
We also have, once again, back on the show, Melissa Kircher of TinLizardProductions.com.
Hi there.
And also the Geek Life podcast at TheGeekLife.tv.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Hi.
And this week we are it's another one of those episodes where we have a topic. The excuse is mostly just to talk about that particular topic and not as much as the webcomics, but there are several webcomics out there that fit the topic, and that's Lovecraft. That's right. We have a couple of guests with us who do Lovecraftian webcomics, and we do have Robin of the Watcher of Yathugu with us on the show.
Hello.
And you are at noodlyappendage.com/watcher.
Or watchercomic.com.
Watchercomic.com. There you go. I don't know. I kind of like noodly appendage.
Noodly appendage. Pastafarian's rule.
Yes. And we also have James of The Path, which you can find at weevolt.com/the_path. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Hello.
Is there a different quicker URL to get to, or is that basically it?
You can do thepath.olddyingkitty.com.
Well, alrighty. Well, welcome to the show, everybody. And let's see here. I'm not even exactly sure where to start with this, other than Melissa. I'll have you start with this, and we'll see where things go. Explain Lovecraft as best you can.
Dude. Okay, fine.
Like, what is Lovecraft? What are these people talking about?
Okay, Lovecraft. H.P. Lovecraft. Howard Phillips Lovecraft was a... Did Haster eat somebody over there? What's all that noise? Anyway, Howard Phillips Lovecraft was a short story writer in the early 20th century, who basically published short stories about eerie happenings and ancient gods, and he created this something called the mythos, which is kind of this pantheon of ancient gods that kind of predate history. And he was a man who was very interested in the sciences and in events on a cosmic level, so there was a huge sense of scope to these short stories that he wrote. And he was also a horror writer who really focused on the reactions of the characters instead of describing what they saw before them. So it was all about the power of your own imagination filling in the blanks, and that's what made it all scary. So that is Lovecraft. He died in the mid-1940s at a fairly young age. I believe he was 46. And so he has a pretty decent body of work, but he lived very poor for most of his life, and he was a very ill man for a lot of his adult life. And you can see a lot of that in his writing.
Didn't he die in, like, 37?
I thought he lasted into the 40s. I'm not entirely sure about that, though.
No,
I'll have to look it up.
It was 37.
It was 37.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mark.
Yeah, we have. He died of colon cancer.
Yeah.
He did not see World War II.
Well, he didn't see our entry into World War II, but right. The politics were set into motion.
Politics.
You saw the storm clouds on the horizon. For sure.
There are a couple of his stories that focus on events during wartime. There's one of them, and now I'm completely blanking on the name, where there's a sunken submarine. Oh, it focuses on a U-boat crew that discovers things beneath the waves.
Ooh.
It's a very good one. I'm going to have to remember which one that was.
Alrighty. Let's see here. And now that we have our little bit of our introduction of what the hell is Lovecraft, as best as we can do without going into grand detail.
I can really go into grand detail, but that's not what we want to do here.
Not yet. We would like
the story is called The Temple.
Oh, very good. Thank you.
All right. Well, there we go. We are going to go through our guests here and talk about their comics. And Robin actually contacted me, and I think she wanted to be on the show or something like that, or she was suggesting this, and it's like, you know what? We haven't thought about that before. Let's do it. And another excuse to get Melissa on the show, but it's Robin. Robin of The Watcher of Yathagu, which we had a hard time pronouncing what the hell it was.
And that's another feature of Lovecraft. If you can pronounce it, it's usually not Lovecraft.
So you have The Watcher of Yathagu, and can you tell us what your comic is basically about?
It is about a city that it's a lone city surviving against horrors. Like, the world has been taken over by Eldritch horrors. They've won. And it's just the city that's surviving against it. And it follows the story of one of the Watchers who are set up to protect the city.
Mm-hmm.
And just terrible things happen to her because that's Lovecraft.
It is.
Well, fine. And you do the comic in a sort... It's digital watercolor is what it is, right?
It's actually a digital ink wash, but it's very similar to watercolors, yeah.
Okay. And what aspects of... Okay, so you mentioned a type of they've won. So if you can explain, what are you talking about that one?
Oh, okay. Essentially, most of Lovecraft's stories focus on the battle between elder gods and the great old ones. And the elder gods are Earth's gods that are Earth's native inhabitants that are before man.
Okay.
And the elder gods, who are cosmic cores from another dimension. And for the most part, they're locked up, sealed away. And generally, what happens in Lovecraft stories is that there's a cultist or some sort of thing that sets it in motion where these elder gods come through and just wreak havoc. And that's already happened, essentially.
Okay. So kind of post Lovecraftian sort of stuff in the style in the worlds and the events thereafter.
Yes.
And I was going to say I'm going to take a stab in the dark, but that probably would happen.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So it sounds like the Watcher, from what I've seen, there is kind of like a sort of lighthouse that needs to be on, kind of like a ward, I'm guessing, to help protect the town or something. Or,
well, one of the things that is very common in Lovecraft stories is that they're great big beasties, but they're easily defeated. Like, Cthulhu was defeated by a blow to the head. So, I mean, or was it the stomach? I don't remember. But it was just like, they poked him and he was like, okay, I'm just going to go back to sleep now. But yeah, Starlight plays a whole, like, light in general plays a part in keeping things away.
Mm.
So, what my world has is the city is the front lines of protection are a series of lighthouses that surround the city.
Okay.
Which is kind of on an island-ish area. So it's a first line of defense and the city's very lighted and
yes. Okay. We have a comment from Zoe says, it was a blow to the head with a ship.
Yes.
Yeah. And he reformed immediately.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so
yeah, usually Lovecraftian protagonists don't get much beyond actually seeing what they're up against, and then they go insane and do horrible things to themselves. And that's usually the end of the story.
We do have Tanya Higgins in the chat room, so she'll be there, hopefully. And next time, hopefully, she'll be here. Headphone is in several pieces.
Hey. Happy Watangi Day, everybody. I forgot to say. Happy Watangi Day. If you're in New Zealand, it's
Watangi Day. What's Watangi Day?
It's a holiday in New Zealand.
Well, alrighty.
Cool. Well, happy Watangi Day.
Okay, all right.
Had to get that out of the way.
And speaking of which, there's another horrible holiday coming up as well. Since, you know, this is why we're talking about Lovecraft. And, you know, as Melissa said, yeah, he wasn't really into sex and all that, I guess. And with the most horrible day coming up.
My birthday.
No, not your birthday. I'm talking about the biggest breakup day of the entire year is coming up.
Yeah, my birthday.
No, February 15th.
February 14th.
No, 15th. February 15th is the biggest breakup day of the year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And that's what we're celebrating.
Watangi Day celebrates the Treaty of Watangi.
Well, already.
New Zealand's founding document in 1840. So happy Watangi Day. Waitangi Day.
And it's keeping in the tradition of in this podcast of hard to pronounce things.
Okay. Happy 4th of July, New Zealand.
Alrighty, there we go. And now we're going to... I got to check my... make sure I'm not running over time. Oh, we're not running over time. We are going to go into The Path. And that's why we have James Riot. James Riot here of The Path. So, good sir, please tell us what your comic is about.
My comic is about... basically, the reincarnation of King Arthur versus the Cthulhu mythos. So the idea being that all of the stuff that H.P. Lovecraft wrote about is starting to come back, and the gods that mankind believed in don't really have any power anymore. And they just kind of throw this guy at the problem and say, it'll fix itself.
So how do they where does the reincarnation of King Arthur come into this? Where'd you get this idea that King Arthur, there we go.
A lot of drinking. I'm a big Matt Wagner fan and a big Mike Mignola fan, and when I was growing up I read Mage and Hellboy and all that stuff, and the idea of King Arthur being reincarnated wasn't anything new, so I didn't feel bad doing it.
Oh.
And I've always been a King Arthur nut, so it just kind of, for me, they just kind of went together pretty easily. Because the idea being that the whole, you know, when England needs him the most, King Arthur's supposed to return. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, why wouldn't you need him the most when there are these big, angry, nasty, otherworldly gods coming down going, hey, this is ours now.
Very cool. So let's see here. So what sort of a Lovecraftian mythos do you employ? What's kind of like a central theme or such?
Well, my favorite H.P. Lovecraft god, for lack of a better term, is Narlathotep. And I like him because he's the most, he's always described as like the most human in that. I mean, like if you read the first story that he appears in, he kind of goes out of his way just to mess with people's heads. Mm-hmm. And so the idea is that he's kind of sick of reality and is going to start taking the steps to end it so that he doesn't have to deal with any of it anymore. Hmm. And the first step in that is waking up Cthulhu, and then that kind of starts like a domino effect throughout the mythos. And that's what the main characters of The Path are trying to stop.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty, let's see here. So we've got our basic introduction of essentially our guests on the show and some webcomics, of course, that utilize Lovecraft. Now, there are a few more webcomics out there One I'm not going to mention because it doesn't look like they've updated in a while and it looks like just porn right now, but somebody said that it was, but I'm not convinced, so I'm just going to leave it be for now.
That it was porn, or?
Well, that it was Lovecraft related, and I think the only thing I see is just tentacles, so I'll just...
Lovecraft porn, yeah. Oh.
Tentacles do not necessarily equal Lovecraft.
Right, so I'm just going to...
Although Lovecraft often does equal tentacles.
Right.
But not necessarily in sexual manner.
Right. And this is totally that, but so I'm going to leave that be for now because somebody said so, and I was like, really? So I'm going to leave that. But there is a comic called, which has been mentioned to me several times, called Lovecraft is Missing, and I'm going to post that to the group. And now I don't know much about this one, but it's only fair to mention it. So it's,
Lovecraft is Missing is set in the 1920s. I just happened to read this one already.
Okay.
So. It's set in the 1920s, and essentially what happens is Lovecraft goes missing, and so they're trying to find him. Cosmic horrors get in the way and whatnot. But
Of course.
So instead of...
He wouldn't be just hiding in his closet or something.
Well, that's the first place they'd look.
Or trapped under a small kitten, as was actually the case in one other writer's memoir, if I remember right. There was... a story that Lovecraft went to visit somebody, and I can't remember who it was. And this person owned a very small kitten. And the kitten crawled up into Lovecraft's lap in the evening, and the friend came downstairs in the morning, and Lovecraft was still sitting in the chair because he didn't want to disturb the cat.
Well, cats do have that sort of mystical power over people. You kind of don't want to get up, especially if they're not declawed.
That's true.
They're warm and cuddly with pens.
Yeah, especially kitten-sized cats. They're deadly.
Knit.
Yeah.
We got a question. Wasn't it Sonia Green? Was a question. I don't know what she's talking about, but okay.
Oh, his wife.
That had the cat, I think.
I don't think it was his wife.
No, the person he was visiting is what he's saying, with the cat. I don't know, maybe. It's possible to get some of these things wrong, I'm sure. But somebody mentioned in the chat room, why hasn't anybody mentioned that James Wright has a cat named Cthulhu? Is this true?
I do have a cat named Cthulhu.
Woohoo!
He's a Maine Coon. He's huge.
Does he have noodly appendages?
Only when he's hungry.
Ooh, litter boxes, unspeakable horrors.
Yes. Yes. He defecates like a human.
Oh, God.
It's not good times.
So if you... Okay, I got a philosophical question. And the question is, if you put Cthulhu in the box of a box of horrors, is he both alive and dead?
Is it like Schrodinger's Lovecraft cat?
Yeah.
I think he would just be sleeping.
Just be sleeping.
Well, alrighty. We're going to take our first break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a lot more about Lovecraft. After, we'll be right back.
The Webcomic Beacon is hosted on the Rampage Network, a webcomics host and community at rampagenetwork.com. And don't forget, we broadcast live on Sundays at webcomicbeacon.com/live. Join our live chat room, have news reports or Becky art, transmit them to webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. Questions? Dial our voicemail at 1-320-310-0922.
Today we're talking about
Cthulhu.
Well, there's that too.
Yeah. Tanya brought up something in the chat room that is actually a very good point. She says, perhaps you should start using Lovecraft characters in quantum thought experiments. What's interesting about that is that Lovecraft was heavily influenced by developments in quantum theory during his time. because that was a huge leap in thinking at the time to, you know, suddenly have this change in classical physics where once you get below a certain size, nothing behaves as you'd expect it to. So, you know, all these flights of fantasy that Lovecraft had about the size of the universe and things not really applying to what humans can see within their own spectrum and things like that is heavily tied into just the fact that there were these advances in science that were suddenly saying, oh yes, things can exist in two states at the same time and things like that. So actually putting Cthulhu in Schrodinger's box is fairly apt.
Awesome.
I'm sure he'll be thrilled as he sits here on my lap sleeping.
Well, already. Well, we do have a couple of things. Well, like Cthulhu is obviously one of the big characters, and you can see him pop up in let's see. There's another comic called Arkham Polytech, which has Cthulhu in it as, I don't know, he's just a t-shirt wearing guy. I'll post a link about it. These are posts being mentioned to me in the Ustream chat room. Right now we are a broadcast simulcasting with Vocal and Ustream because we're seeing how things work. And I got a spammer in the Vocal, so I am going to ban him.
We can actually comment.
Is he spamming anything good?
Well, he just keeps posting something about, I'm guessing it's his thing.
Is there actually a chat room on the Vocal side?
There is. You have to click join event. If you see the Vocal thing and there's a red button that says join event.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's what it is. But
it didn't let me in.
Well, I have no idea what to say about Vocal, which is why we're simulcasting with Ustream as well.
Yay, Ustream!
So I'm not going to give up on Vocal. I'm going to see how they do it. See how they do things. But the option is available because we did do a simulcasting with TalkShoe and Ustream for a while, and then we just went all Ustream. So we'll see. We'll see how it works.
I did like Vocal's player better than Ustream's, but
let's see here. And there's another comic that somebody posted called Riven Soul, which is supposed to be Tech Lovecraft or Techno Lovecraft or something like that. I haven't seen it, but that's just what people are saying, so I'm going to mention it. So,
and there you go.
And there you go. And you've seen a bit of love of you know Cthulhu, I guess, in the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. Obviously, I mean you can't think of what that pirate.
Technically,
he's based off of them at the very least.
Oh yeah, and there's definitely Cthulhu tones coming into Davy Jones and the design of Davy Jones.
I mean, what a design, though.
Oh, it's a beautiful design. That whole the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, all three of them, are masterpieces of set design and costume design. It's just that the last two movies really didn't have anything much to do except tell Johnny Depp to do more.
And now there's a new one.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah.
Part four. I don't know when that comes out.
Just let it die.
Well, if it's better, if it actually has a written story or something like that and logic, I don't know.
There's too much money in it to let it go.
It's so sad because the first movie was this perfect little nugget when we didn't expect anything from it. It's like, wow, this is actually good and it's fun and... And then there's two more, kind of like the Matrix movies. Like the Matrix movies.
I do like Johnny Depp.
Exactly like the Matrix movies.
Exactly like the Matrix movies.
I don't know. Everybody says that third one is god awful, but I actually kind of liked it.
They are what they are.
They're not. Not super awesome, but.
And this all relates to Lovecraft.
Really bad though.
And this all relates to Lovecraft. Oh, wait, no, it doesn't. All right, so...
Hey, you brought it up.
No,
he's
I didn't.
He's got a tentacle beard.
Tentacle beard, so that's related.
Tentacles.
But I can't find any Lovecraft in The Matrix, so we're done with that.
Well, speaking of movies, they're actually making At the Mountains of Madness.
Yep, they've been making it for like 10 years now.
I'm so afraid of that. Del Toro kind of gets silly sometimes.
Yeah, but and he's...
If he handles it like Pan's Labyrinth...
Oh goodness. The thing is, when Del Toro is given free rein and he does his own stuff, like in his foreign language movies, he's the perfect person to be doing this film. And I've met several of the artists who were working on design for that film. And if that's what they're going for, I'm very, very happy. I mean, obviously he's working with Mignola because he's already worked with Mignola for Hellboy. But he was also talking with Gahan Wilson and, oh goodness, there was at least one other person he had doing drawings for that I was... And now I can't remember who it was. It may have been Bernie Wrightson, but he was definitely talking to Gahan Wilson at one point, and that's very cool, too.
So what is this that you're talking about?
At the Mountains of Madness is the... I believe it's the longest story that Lovecraft ever wrote. It's like novella length.
Yeah,
it's one of my favorite stories by Lovecraft, and it involves a expedition to Antarctica, where they discover, you know, old ones and ancient temples, and the people in the expedition are picked off one by one, and it's this great adventure story. But they wind up in an ancient city, and that comes into play with getting a lot of art design going on this film.
Yeah, I think it's one of the few movies coming out that will actually benefit from being in 3D.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, especially when they're flying up to the mountain, like, in the book, when they're flying up to the mountains, the way it's described, you can actually see that working in 3D. And yeah, it's kind of almost the only way it could work.
It's all about spectacle. And if they do the 3D right, they could do things to deliberately screw with your vision. And... Yeah. That would be very appropriate to do in this case. It's one of the very few reasons to do that sort of thing in 3D.
I'm going to kind of miss not having an official here's what an elder thing looks like, though.
Yeah.
Because now it's going to be, well, here's what they look like forever.
Yeah, although... You know, you can have various versions floating around. I mean, they've done that with other Lovecraftian entities. And the only one that sticks is Cthulhu because Lovecraft himself actually sketched Cthulhu. You know, he's got that little pen sketch that is all over the internet if you go look it up. And that's why Cthulhu has the, you know, tiny wings and the big squid head and the little tentacles. And, you know,
yes,
noodly appendages.
Right, right.
Also, I see that mentioned in the chat room is the Call of Cthulhu movie, which is a modern-made movie made in the style of a 1920s silent film. It's really good. It's not that long, either, and you can pretty easily find it online.
Well, that's about half an hour.
Yeah, yeah, it's like a half-hour film. Really well done. Really, really well done.
Have you ever seen In the Mouth of Madness?
Yes. The John Carpenter film?
Yeah, I think that's like the best Lovecraft-ish movie ever made.
I agree with that. I think the best one ever made is Darren Aronofsky's Pi. It has nothing to do with Lovecraft, but it definitely works on all the same principles. The forbidden knowledge.
Oh, the master just kind of starts to mess with him. And...
Yeah, it's so well portrayed. I've for a long time, huh, I've said...
I didn't even think of that when I watched it.
Oh, it fits into the mold perfectly, even though it's not directly based on anything Lovecraft. And the Kabbalah kind of doubles as the Necronomicon. I'm totally serious.
Wow, I'm going to watch that movie again in a completely different mindset now.
For a long time, I
think I figured out what I'm going to do for the rest of the day instead of sleep.
I'm so proud. I've always said that the best Lovecraftian movies have nothing to do with Lovecraft, or very little to do with actually basing their story on Lovecraft. Like, the Reanimator film has very little to do with the Herbert West Reanimator, the short story. But they take the ball and run with it, and on the cinematic side, when you take the ball and run with it, a lot of times it works, because you're working with principles instead of really slavishly sticking to the meat of the stories. And honestly, there's not a whole lot of meat to those stories. They're often so short that you can't sustain a whole movie.
Right.
So, you know, like Pi or In the Mouth of Madness, you know, they work very, very well, whereas things that are, you know, try to really stick to the story or just get the wrong idea about how to tell a Lovecraftian story are just crap. Like the Unnameable. Yeah. Oh, that's crap. The Resurrected, which was based on the strange case of Charles Dexter Ward, I think it was. It has like one good scene.
I paid $5 for that movie, and I feel cheated.
What's really sad is the scene that I was waiting for, the scene that it's the this will make or break this movie scene where everything goes into blackness. In the short story, there's an entire scene that plays out completely in the dark. The protagonist is trapped in this dungeon-like room where there are pits in the floor and there are strange things scuttling about in the bottoms of the pits, and he can't see a damn thing, and horrible things will happen to him if he makes one false move. Very tense scene. And in the movie, they actually had the guts to turn out all the lights. There's that entire scene plays out completely in blackness, and I was so happy. The rest of the movie is dreck, but that scene is great. Like, for 5 minutes, it turns into a...
Which movie was this again?
The Resurrected.
The Resurrected, okay.
Starring Chris Sarandon, if I remember right.
Yep.
In one of his
horror and Masters of Horror actually did a pretty good adaptation of Dreams in the Witch House.
Yeah, actually, that was very good because they gave it
to... I was surprised. I thought that was going to be awful.
No, Stuart Gordon took that on. And now Stuart Gordon... Now, you got me talking about movies. This is what happened.
He's got his moments, but half the time he just kind of goes a little crazy.
Well, the secret is with Stuart Gordon is don't pair him up with Brian Yuzna. But, when Stuart Gordon is left to his own devices or when he's just paired with Jeffrey Combs, lovely things happen. And they're both very interested in Lovecraft, and they can often do very good things. The Masters of Horror episode was directed and conceived of by Stuart Gordon, and worked out pretty well, even though it does make the trip up of you have to have a female character to make it appealing somehow. I've never figured out why that is. You know, it's sometimes it's okay to not have a female character, and given that Lovecraft stories had no female characters, well, it had one female character, but it turns out she's a man. I mean, it's okay. Anyway, I'm ranting now.
Yes.
Yes, I am. Oh, there was one other thing I was going to bring up, and then I'll let everybody else talk. This last year, I was at Fantastic Fest, and both Stuart Gordon and Jeffrey Combs were there. So they had this little mini retrospective where they played Reanimator and From Beyond, and had them both talk before the movie. But also, Jeffrey Combs did his one-man play where he played Edgar Allan Poe for 90 minutes. And it's the concept of the play, which Stuart Gordon wrote, is that Edgar Allan Poe is giving a reading / lecture to fellow people in, you know, shortly before he died. And it's just essentially like sitting in a theater watching Edgar Allan Poe talk to you for 90 minutes. It's really strange. Jeffrey Combs is very good as Edgar Allan Poe, but it's also kind of Lovecraftian because, you know, Poe covered a lot of the same land. Anyway, I'll let other people talk. I'm running out of steam.
That's quite all right. We did lose James a bit, okay. So we got him back. Robin, how's it going?
Yeah,
all right.
I'm not hearing much out of you.
I am really bad at trivia, so when we're talking movies, I'm like, hey, that's good, and then that's pretty much all I have to say.
Well, let's see here. Is there any particular Lovecraftian stuff that you want to mention or go into, some of your favorite stuff, since that's what we're talking about?
I think it's important to note that Lovecraft was writing prior to Lovecraft, most of the horror was that supernatural Dracula and Frankenstein and all of that. Mm-hmm. Lovecraft really wrote horror stories for atheists, as he put it. And part of that is, it's really interesting if you read his stories, is he mixes realism, like real names of authors and poets and stuff, with Lovecraftian mythos. So it gives a sense of like realism, which my comic probably doesn't have, but whatever. But yeah, one of my favorites is actually The Curse of Yig.
Okay.
And it's about essentially this guy, herpetologist, study of snakes. Anyway,
yep.
But he hears about this yig, and he's trying to get information about it because no one's talking, and it eventually ends up that, and he is terrified of snakes. He talks to this doctor that's terrified of snakes, and eventually he finds out that Yig is the guardian protector or guardian god of snakes, and he considers them all his children, and if you hurt one, then you're cursed. And the curse that they mention is that snakes will swarm you and bite you so much that your body pops with poison.
Yeah,
it's just horrifying. But it's a really good story, and I suggest everyone reads it so I don't give away the ending.
Yeah, Curse of Yig is an interesting one because it's one of the ones where Lovecraft was collaborating with somebody else. Zelia Bishop, if I remember right.
Yes, it was actually the last story he collaborated with her because she was not good about paying him.
Funny that.
Which is probably why he was poor.
Oh,
it's part of why he is poor. He was the poor man was starving half the time. He also ghost wrote a story with Harry Houdini, which is rather interesting too. Although not quite as interesting as Curse of Yig. Oh, we lost James again.
Yep, we're gonna. Yep, I think we got him back right in time to go to break. And of course, the second break is when I try to find a musical piece, and I'm pretty sure I could find something Lovecraft or Cthulhu, particularly of comedy, somewhere. So we'll see what the music will bring this during this break. Hopefully, I can find something good. We'll be right back with a little bit of news and a little bit more Lovecraft.
Cthulhu Fatogen! What a wonderful phrase! Cthulhu Fatogen! Say it and you're crazed!
It means Cthulhu rising out of the haze.
It's a prophecy we'll all soon see. Cthulhu Fatogen.
Ah, yes, Cthulhu Fatogen. It's our credo.
Oh, I hate that!
What?
Han Solo clearly shot first.
Not credo, credo!
When he was an outer god.
When I was an outer god.
Nice modulation there. He found that his form lacked a certain appeal. All his glistening pseudopods made blood congeal.
I'm a sensitive soul. At the end of the day, it hurt that I made my friend's flesh all melt away. Oh, the shame!
Oh, the terrible shame!
What a disgrace!
Falling from grace!
Till I decided to blame...
Whose fault is it?
The whole human race!
Yeah, what the heck were they doing hanging around with an acidic mass of flesh-devouring polyps anyway?
Hey, can I help it if I'm a chick magnet?
Get the Ulufathagen! Now we're in for strange days. It screws up your noggin, turns planets into buffets. And great Cthulhu spares whoever obeys. So get off of me, you monstrosity, Cthulhu Fatogen.
Cthulhu Fatogen, Cthulhu Fatogen, Cthulhu Fatogen, Cthulhu Fatogen, Cthulhu Fatogen. We do this so much more, he's
not going to
show up.
It means Cthulhu rising out of the haze. It's insanity for humanity, Cthulhu Fatogen.
I say Cthulhu.
And I say Cthagin.
If I said a Thakwa,
we need a toboggan.
Cthulhu Cthagin.
All right.
That was Cthulhu Cthagin by Tom Smith and the great Luke Ski. Mark, you just posted in Ustream that there's a BBC miniseries about Charles, and then it says censored.
What the hell was that?
Charles Dickens. There's a BBC miniseries about Charles Dickens from the 70s that stars Roy Dotrice. From Beauty and the Beast and Space 1999 and many other things. He plays Dickens. And there's an episode where he meets Edgar Allan Poe. And it's pretty cool, actually. It's pretty surreal and odd and well worth watching. I think you can stream that episode on Netflix if you want to go look for it.
It's going to be my next new swear word. It's going to be awesome.
Dickens!
Dickens!
Yeah, it censors for everybody else, I think, except the person who says it.
I can see it, but it doesn't...
I don't know, weird. anyway, Lovecraft. Actually, we got some news to talk about. There was a milestone I forgot to mention a while ago, who actually emailed me and said suggested a Lovecraft comic, The Lovecraft is Missing, and which I forgot to mention his milestone, and this was for, like, last month. He hit his 200th milestone, and that's the comic is I'm Here to See If You Can Fly with Broken Wings at imheretoseeifyoucanfly.blogspot.com. So congratulations on your milestone.
And learn to fly again.
We don't have any other milestones this week. There's not a whole lot of extra news.
Oh, yes. I forget now. Slightly off topic, I think, is that 3 years.
Oh. Well, there we are. Congratulations on that. And Phineas has hit its 1,000th page on Tuesday, so congratulations for that. Checking our chat room.
That is a machine. He's also an old machine. He's powered by steam.
let's see. As I was mentioning earlier, we have the most horriblest holiday coming up, and then the one after it is the biggest breakup day of the year. And I've been offering to draw people's webcomic characters, heartbroken webcomic characters. Give them a sketch for this particular day of February 15th. And it's pretty cool because I've got a bunch of people that have had sent me an email about it because I posted it on my Tumblr at toomanythingstolist.com, and it's there's instructions there, but I did say the deadline was yesterday. But for anyone who's listening live right now, because I'm taking this out of the MP3 live right now, if you follow the instructions over there, you can get on my list yet. And that's just something I'm going to try to do. I like doing sketches every once in a while. I'm going to try this. Ryan Estrada has Ryan Estrada Day where he does like 100 guest strips, and it's like I can do a few sketches of people's characters, and we'll see how that goes. So let's have fun with that. When is the Ryan Estrada Day? Does anybody in the chat room know?
Is it Ryan or Eric Estrada Day?
Or is it
Eric Estrada stepped on my foot.
Really?
I thought
Larry Wilcox just got busted for stock fraud.
He actually drove over it with a golf cart.
Wow. You got your foot harmed by Eric Estrada.
And you know what? Fans were chasing him and they took a photo of my feet.
Wow.
No,
if he had been driving his motorcycle, he would have missed you.
I know, but it was a golf cart in a Detroit conventional.
It was wider and had four wheels. And
yeah, and he was distracted.
He wasn't used to it.
He was distracted by Mickey Dolenz.
There you go. What a story. California Highway Patrol distracted by the monkey.
Uh-huh. Oh, I was distracted by Mickey Dolenz too. It's like,
there you go.
Wait, why are you here?
Did he have
Is that Mickey Dolan? Ow, my foot!
Yeah. Is Mickey the one that would wear the crocheted hat, or was that Peter?
No, that was Peter.
Yeah. That was Peter.
Mickey Dolan's is the one who looks sort of like somebody squeezed in the middle of his face.
Yeah.
There's one more milestone that was mentioned by Zoe Robinson. Knob Mouse has hit 300 strips at knobmouse.net. So congratulations. That is it for the milestones. We also have some monthly picks from Becky Beacon, our cover girl here at webcomicbeacon.com. As close as you're going to get to a review, you can submit your comic to beckybeacon@gmail.com and see if she likes it. And if she does, she'll post about it on her Twitter, @BeckyBeacon. For January, let's see what she was looking through here. Looks like I'm just going to read off her tweets. Starts off ordinary, but accelerates to a magical whoa, what ride. And keeping an eye on this Not in Kansas Anymore comic at namesakecomic.com. Next one is not your typical fourth wall comic, but the most unique take on the concept I've seen in a while. See newspaper comic strip at riotfish.com. 14 Nights follows a very blunt man who obviously has issues. I really like the inking of this comic. Keeping it bookmarked, 14nights.com. That's 14nights.com. And Godseeker is a story of a newborn goddess going rogue. Many story angles in play. I wish it would update faster. And that's at girlomatic.com/Godseeker. And there you have it, Becky Beacon's monthly webcomic picks of the month. And I think we are all out of news, other than to say that for those of you that have been paying attention, we are trying to do the newscast now weekly, so that means that the Webcomic Beacon updates twice a week now. We'll see how this works. Next week, we're going to have another Tropecast. Second Sunday of the month is when we do the Tropecasts, at least. If we do any more during the week, during the month, we'll post it at webcomicbeacon.com/calendar of what's coming up. So I don't know what we're going to have going for next week, but of course, Adam Smithy of the Apple of Discord is, of course, the host of that episode. And we're going to see what we can do. By the way, that is all I have. I think we're back to Lovecraft. Is there anything left to talk about?
How in depth do you want to get?
I'm still thinking about Mickey Dolenz.
Let's throw Mickey Dolenz into life. Let's replace him. Let's replace Randolph Carter with Mickey Dolenz and just run with it.
That'd be awesome.
Does Lovecraft have like a recurring hero in any of his stories? Like Sax Rohmer would have. Nayland Smith.
I think the only one who shows up more than once is Randolph Carter, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think there are family names that are echoed between different stories, but not necessarily the same characters. Like, they'd be mentioned in passing.
Yeah.
But I think the closest you'd get to a recurring character is Herbert West, because technically Herbert West Reanimator was published in series. So, because was originally published in a magazine, I think in 6 segments.
Mm.
So, it's actually really weird reading the whole thing as a short story, because each end of each chapter, quote unquote, kind of ends in a weird way, and then the next one picks up with a recap, because so half of the story is recaps because it was originally published as a serial.
Interesting. That's the first Fu Manchu book is exactly the same way. The Insidious Fu Manchu, because they were all articles that were then put into a novel form. So they do exactly the same thing. It's not the best way to read a story. You have to consider them as separate stories.
Oh, there's a question in the chat room. Suggestion of a story for someone who has never read a Lovecraft story. Where to start? Shadow Over Innsmouth has already been suggested. My favorite,
The Color Out of Space.
Color Out of Space is a really good one. The Rats in the Walls is my favorite.
That's my fiance's favorite.
Yeah, Rats in the Walls is a good place to start. Technically, they're all kind of a good place to start because, you know, they're not really tied together in any way. They're actually all written to be very nice little enclosed spaces as far as plots go, but there are some that are better than others.
I always kind of recommend Shadow of Rinsmith because it has the most action.
Yeah, it's
and
very
it's kind
good.
Of like an easy jumping in point for someone who hasn't read it, because it's a heavy read and he uses a lot of antiquated English.
Yeah,
so if it's not something you're used to,
right?
It gets kind of like, why am I reading this?
Yeah, Color Out of Space is kind of the same way. There's a lot going on in that story, whereas Rats in the Walls, I like because it's very psychological. I think it's a very intense story.
Is he using like Victorian Edwardian English or 1920s English or?
Yeah,
well, because even what he was writing when he was writing in the 20s, what he was using in the 20s was considered antiquated then.
Yeah.
So more like Arthur Conan Doyle style.
Arthur Conan Doyle gets more to the point than Lovecraft does.
Yeah.
Okay.
Although that said, Lovecraft is pretty concise when it comes to concluding a plot. I mean, he some of those stories are only 5-10 pages long. They are pretty brief.
We do have a mention. Tanya says that The Call of Cthulhu is actually free for Kindle readers right now. Mm-hmm. So, and didn't it...
also, they are all public domain now.
So yeah, I think DagonBytes.com has all of them up.
Yep.
Well, yep. There you go. Now you have no excuse.
They're all over the place.
somebody
it's
mentioned
only your own illiteracy keeping you from reading it now.
Yeah. We had a couple of other mentions. Zoe had mentioned The Statement of Randolph Carter. Somebody says The Shadow of Over Bismuth, and I'm pretty
Ismuth.
Sure. Yeah. He was making it.
Shadow over.
The tale of an ominous bottle of Pepto-Bismol. No, sorry, I had to mention
that.
It
would explain why everyone in the town was pale and sickly looking.
Neon pink just doesn't seem like a Lovecraftian color.
Contrast.
Contrast.
Well, if it was described as a sickly pink, I think it would be.
Barf pink.
Barf.
Isn't all... That's Pepto-Bismol.
Shadow over Bismuth. Oh god, that's awesome.
Heartburn, upset stomach, diarrhea.
Yeah, Statement of Randolph Carter is a good one. Or Statement of Randolph Carter in The Strange Case of Charles Dexter Ward are both very good too.
Yeah, I think it's important that for first time readers just stay away from the dream quest of Unknown Kadath, because you will hate yourself.
Oh god, those are so dense.
Like the Silmarillion of Lovecraftian horror.
Oh yeah.
Well, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
It was his first draft, so he's a bit more verbose than he normally is, which is saying something.
God, I still haven't gotten through Silmarillion, and I've tried hard. I've never made it more than maybe a quarter or a third of the way through that book. I gave up on it.
I had a try.
Tolkien needed an editor. Yeah. Bad.
I think he needed a bitch slap, so what he needed.
Yeah.
Stop writing so much, damn it. Just get to the point. We don't care what the rocks looked like. And even if we did, we didn't care about each and every one of them.
Just say they're gray and move on.
Well, Tolkien was also like everything was named. Everything had a name, and if he told you the name, he had to explain in 19 pages where the name came from.
Oh man, that's what I hated about Charles Dickens' Old Curiosity Shop. I couldn't get past the first chapter. I was like, okay, this was in high school when I decided I'm going to read some Charles Dickens on my own. So I open up the Old Curiosity Shop, I start reading it, and I don't know what's happening. He's going into this guy. This guy's just met this other guy who apparently has three other names and is going into this history about him and his kids or something. Someone's like, what the fuck am I reading? What does this have to do with anything? And I close the book, I put it back.
There's a lot of Dickens I haven't read. I've read Tale of Two Cities. I've read Christmas Carol, obviously. And I might have read Oliver Twist. I'm not sure, but... Yeah, there's a lot of crazy Dickens I've just not read.
You know what Dickens has nothing to do with? Lovecraft.
It's true.
We're talking about writing and confused and depth.
Now, Now, there's something really wrong if the guy with ADD is steering us back towards the subject.
For people that can't, like, just can't get through Lovecraft reading, which I don't blame you guys, it's a bit dense. A lot of authors have, like, taken to writing compilations and short stories with Lovecraft mythos that are a lot easier to read.
Yeah, okay. So Lovecraft was very
good
about...
Go for some August Derleth.
Yeah, he's a bit... August Derleth. But yeah, Lovecraft was very good about encouraging other writers to play in his sandbox.
Yeah, he was the Wikipedia of the 1920s, I suppose.
Yeah, he was.
And just as accurate.
What's really a lot of fun, after you've read some Lovecraft and kind of get what he's all about, read Robert E. Howard's Cthulhu stories, because they're hilarious. Because it
and Lovecraft, going to Conan, because yeah, stuff shows up in Conan, and
oh yeah, but what's lovely about, you know, you read Lovecraft and Lovecraft's all about human beings are ants in the universe, and we're nothing, and we can be squashed like bugs, and we can do nothing about these elder gods. Robert E. Howard is like, I walk up to the monster and I kill it. I find it hilarious.
He was the original Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, he was. Really was.
See that Eldritch Horror that you can't even technically say is in our plane of existence? Hit it with a sword.
Yeah. I poke it.
And it dies.
I waste him with my crossbow.
Blows up into a million pieces.
Lightning bolt. Lightning bolt. Lightning bolt.
Throw a barrel at it.
poke it in the head with a ship.
Yeah. Okay, we got so if the Lovecraft, okay, now I have another project idea. Now I probably shouldn't even be trying or even attempting this. But it'd be interesting, because I was thinking, are there any audiobooks? And I was thinking, wait, they're public domain. We could do totally a podcast with roles and everything of going over Lovecraftian books. It's like,
oh,
okay.
Hell, we could.
Yeah.
So we're ready to play. Is what
HP Podcraft is actually already doing that.
Oh, darn it. All right. Well, there it is. So that's something to check it out. HP Podcraft. Oh. What was it?
HPPodcraft.com.
Podcraft. Well, there we go. Well, we'll plug that then, because there you go. An idea that I think of is something that I should be checking out if it already has been done. So...
What's also fun is there are some creators, at least here in Minneapolis, that work in the Minnesota Fringe Festival. And more often than not, when the Fringe Festival rolls around, there's at least one Lovecraft-based play. There was one year, there was a one-man version of Rats in the Walls one year. Curse of Yig was available last year as a play adaptation. If you just look around... There's people doing Lovecraft stuff all over the place.
Isn't there like a Lovecraft convention? Somewhere?
There is a Lovecraft.
Yeah, it's in Portland every year.
Yep, it's an HP Lovecraft film festival. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
There's a great little short movie on YouTube, and I have it favorited, so I'll post the link really quick. It's called Dying, and it's about this girl who's dying and actually tries to get the Church of the Crawling Chaos recognized as an official religion by the government.
Nice.
If you can be a
it's
Jedi.
Like a really short thing. It almost looks like something that was done as a theater class project.
There's
it's
also
about 10 minutes long, but it's really clever.
Huh.
There's also a short film, a set of short films called Spooky, Spooky, Scary, Scary, which are a lot of fun. And they're made by a couple guys who are also very popular at the HP Lovecraft Film Festival. But Spooky, Spooky, Scary, Scary all is one big word.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah, hilarious
stuff.
I've
seen that, yeah. Oh, this is going to be packed with links this episode.
Oh, yes.
And we are getting down to the end of our time here. We do have some time to still talk about some more stuff. If you really want to mention some stuff, now is the time to do it.
Oh goodness!
Can I do a really bad moment of shameless self promotion?
Sure.
I'm actually part of a contest called the WeVault Weekly Rumble.
Okay.
And this week is starting the last round of that, and if I win $500.
Ooh.
Ooh.
And. if I win, that $500 is going towards the money my fiance and I are saving up towards our wedding because we're paying for it ourselves.
Yeah, whatever.
And it's really easy to help me win. All you have to do is go to my comic every day and click the Facebook like button underneath the pages. That's it. It's money for weddings.
Do it for love.
That way the parents don't have any say.
He doesn't murder me for losing it.
Yeah, parents don't have any say whatsoever if you pay for your own wedding.
Well, it's not even so much. They're not in a position to help.
Oh, well, so still.
We're running the show, so.
Everyone that I've talked to.
As I'm sure you guys know, webcomic artists, we don't make a whole lot of money.
Yeah. Well, everyone I know that has gotten married, two people, has told me basically elope. You don't have to deal with any of the bullshit with the parents and this and that. I want more people to be there. They want so and so. You don't never know. Or talk to you. Oh, we gotta have them there and all this other stuff. So it's like. Well, that's what I hear anyway.
The wedding Nazi. I'm not letting people that I don't want to come to the wedding.
Will it be a Cthulhu themed wedding? Will the veil be made out of tentacles?
That'd be sweet.
We're already planning on having tentacles wrapped around the wedding cake.
Ah, sweet. Well, already, let's see here. All right.
Is the cake going to be topped with fish people?
I'm not from New England, so we could have it. We could just have a big amorphous gelatinous blob.
Oh, make the wedding cake out of Jello.
We have like a Shoggoth cake.
You get the traditional wedding toppers, you put them in the Jello mold. Floating in there. And then you put that on top of the cake.
We get custom ones made that look like they're screaming.
Mini figs. Make them out of Lego.
I think we've come to the end of our journey today. The end of the path. And, so we have once again I do want to thank everybody for being on the show. Robin of the Watcher of Yathaku, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
James Riot of The Path, thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And Melissa, of course, thanks once again for coming back.
Thank you.
And you can check her out at the Geek Life podcast at thegeeklife.tv.
Plug, plug, plug.
Plug, plug, plug. I've been Fess of TooManyThingsToList.com.
Plug, plug, plug.
And this is Mark of AutumnLake.com.
Plug, plug, plug. Plug.
Plug.
All right.
Plug.
Plug.
Tune in for more at webcomicbeacon.com.
Brought to you by Cthulhu Coffee.
Yes.
Oh, we didn't even talk about that.
Yeah, we didn't even plug Cthulhu Coffee.
Yeah, Melissa, you have this. You had this. You did this thing called Cthulhu Coffee.
Yeah, for many, many years in the early days of the internet, I ran a website / convention room party, kind of traveling party called Cthulhu Coffee. It's the site's still out there. It just hasn't been updated since 2004 or so.
Did you ever do that at Otakon?
No, I didn't.
Oh, because that sounded familiar for a minute.
Yeah, I was all over the place with it. One of the things Cthulhu Coffee, the site actually became kind of known for, was doing convention reports, because I'd travel all over the place and then write up stories of whatever happened at the conventions. And then, got busy with other stuff and
life.
Life happened.